I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. It's about interesting family stories and the truth behind them. It's available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
And a very good morning to you at 9:07 here on WBEN. I am Tim Wenger here for BMAS and Beamer today. Joe is going to be along here in just about an hour or so. David's going to be here in an hour. Joe's going to be here at 2 this afternoon. I'm getting my day all messed up. Tom is out for a couple of days, and will be back with us perhaps over the weekend, you never know, or on Monday. But at any rate, so Joe's sitting in for him, and David Bellavia, as normal, will be on at 10 o'clock this morning. And so here I am. And what a week it has been for you out there, for me. And we'll talk a little bit about where I've been since Saturday and what I've kind of done. And welcome your comments, your questions about this whole madness that we are all experiencing together, and comes to somewhat of a head this morning in a courtroom in downtown Buffalo, and it's going to happen in a special courtroom in the basement of the Erie County Courthouse. Which is what they have reserved for fairly large cases in the past that I've covered in downtown Buffalo. This courtroom is in the basement of the court building. No windows. It is completely off, you know, the beaten path, if you will. No one walking through County Hall would have access to it, the court building, I should say. There's a direct connection to the Erie County Holding Center, so this suspect can be securely moved from place to place, et cetera, because this is just an unbelievable, event that is unfolding as far as legal concerns are. They really strangely and oddly and importantly need to protect this suspect from any harm from himself, from anyone else. So that is going to be happening this morning at 9:30. WBEN's Brayton Wilson is already in place down there in the courthouse. He's going to be joining us at some point and kind of give us the lay of the land, what's happening down there. But it is a media madhouse, I can tell you that right now. Overflow only. It is a very large courtroom, and they've also already deemed it to be somewhat unsafe as the number of people that it is growing. So that is the situation occurring in a courtroom in downtown Buffalo. Throughout the day, we will keep you posted and updated on what is unfolding in that courtroom and what happens. Legally, we know that a number of things could happen. Nothing could happen. There may not be a hearing at all. There may be a hearing, a felony hearing. There may already have been an indictment that has been sought by the grand jury, and then it would be referred over to state Supreme Court, and then it could be tried or, you know, heard, I should say. The felony hearing on that would be as early as sometime next week, according to John Elmore. Those are all of the options that could unfold, and then some. You never know with lawyers, right? Who knows what may occur? But covering this madness in downtown Buffalo in a courtroom is WBEN's Brayton Wilson. And Brayton, you've already described to me off air, I'll let you do it on air, but just a media madhouse, as one would imagine, in downtown Buffalo.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect word to describe this, as a madhouse. Just a number of media outlets have flooded the courthouse here down at the Erie County Courthouse, which has resulted in an overflow of media reporters being anywhere near that courtroom. It essentially has led to that they're seeing it as a potential security threat at this point. So they have instructed some of the media here to be upstairs, down on the first floor, technically, to kind of wait things out and see what happens.
Yeah, it's interesting. You've covered a few court events in downtown Buffalo in your recent tenure with us. You have not been into that courtroom in the basement. It really is. It's something. It's where I just described on the air. This is where very large cases have been tried. And it is. It's a very secure environment, obviously, being in a basement with a direct connection over to the holding center. So obviously, security is a big concern with this one.
Absolutely. And every right for security to be a big concern. I mean, I was talking to the one security guard, and he said this is probably the biggest thing that's happened in the city of Buffalo, at least here, probably since the McKinley assassination. And You know, the national spotlight remains on Buffalo for this entire time. So, yeah, no, it seems like that this is just going to be, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, just, you know, where things go, because there might not even be a felony hearing today.
Right. Legally, we don't know what's going to happen. I was just kind of going through all of those options, and I'll leave that to the attorneys. And at this point, we'll find out what they do. You know, you mentioned the national interest. You know, whenever there's, you know, I've seen that courtroom full for a local trial. So this obviously, the eyes of the world, not just the nation, the world, are on this court in Buffalo, and you know what this judge decides to do. You know, interesting of note, you know, you're waiting to find this out as well. We have applied, as have you know, most, if not all, media outlets. There's an application process you go through to get access to be able to take photographs and video and use audio from the court, and then the judge can decide whether he even is going to allow. You know, you to have a phone or a recorder, et cetera, and have a feed from the courtroom. He can also decide whether just still images are allowed, things like that. That has not been determined.
No.
That is yet to be determined, and I'm told will be decided at the opening of the hearing. So we just don't know yet.
No, I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty at this point. Just, you know, a lot of the media that are here are either downstairs waiting for this to get going to see where this kind of goes. And I know that Tom Puckett yesterday talked to a couple of different attorneys and legal analysts and specialists that talked about the possibility that this felony hearing it doesn't happen, and that this process is very nice and swift and quick. So we'll definitely be on top of it as best as we can. We'll be providing updates throughout the day as much as we can. And for anybody that's interested to see how everything plays out, they can find all the details over at WBEN.com.
You bet, Brayton. I'll let you go and get into your place there in the media madness and the legal madness that's unfolding. Thanks so much.
Sounds good. Thanks, Tim.
All right, WBEN's Brayton Wilson, who has been covering this whole situation and circumstance on Saturday as well, assigned to cover the court aspect that is going to unfold. And again, we just don't know what's going to happen. So follow with us throughout the day. We'll have it for you on our Twitter feed at WBEN, of course, at WBEN.com, and on the air whenever we get indication of what may or may not occur. It's interesting, John Flynn, who is extremely, you know, forthright with what he can be about, has now faded off of the media landscape, which would indicate to me that I think John Elmore is probably spot on and correct in saying that he does not think this felony hearing will occur. This is a Buffalo City Court judge, City Court. It's occurring in this Erie County Court room. In the basement of that of courthouse, you know, for security reasons. But it's City Court Judge Hannah is presiding over all of this. And I don't think it's going to happen either. John Flynn, I think, if you read the tea leaves, has indicated that he gets quiet once something goes to the grand jury. He did a series of interviews. I believe Monday was the last day he spoke. He spoke on WBEN. I know he was on CNN. He did multiple interviews throughout the day, and then said, "That's it. I'm not going to talk after that." And that, to me, tells me that this has been presented to the grand jury, and perhaps that what John Elmore has said will be the case, and that is that simply a legal document, if you will be handed off, and this case will be referred to state Supreme Court, and then you know, anybody's guess from there. I'm no lawyer, but John Elmore has indicated that from that point, perhaps it could begun to be go through the legal proceedings in state Supreme Court early next week. We will figure it out. We'll follow along with you throughout the day and bring you the latest as we have it again at WBEN on Twitter or WBEN.com and on the air. You know, I really didn't have like a big plan here. I'm kind of going against everything I tell our talk show host to do, and, you know, have a plan and stick to it, right? But since Saturday, you know, I took a phone call Saturday from a trusted source in the Buffalo Police Department who told me that, you know, something was unfolding at the Tops on Jefferson Avenue, and ever since have been engulfed in this coverage that we've been bringing you. And I don't think many of you have been down on Jefferson Avenue since Saturday. Maybe not recently either. I have. I've been there. I've seen the notable moments, the president, the press conferences. Yesterday, the Buffalo Bills, Sabres, the Bandits. Those are the things you're seeing in the media, and there's some things you're not seeing too. And those are the ones that are sticking out in my mind, not the big moments that we've all seen. And, I'll kind of let you in on some of those observations that I've seen. And if you have questions, comments about the coverage, what it's been like down there, and how this case is all unfolding and being perceived out there, I welcome your calls at 803-0930, 803-0930 here on WBEN. I can tell you this, it is so difficult to go down Jefferson Avenue and walk Jefferson Avenue and East Ferry Street now, and I'll tell you why. Again, those big moments, it was a moving time yesterday when the Buffalo Bills showed up, and they handled that very well. And those, I said on WGR earlier with Howard that I felt uncomfortable being there with the players. I felt particularly uncomfortable when I was interacting with Josh Allen and he was interacting with the public, because Josh Allen and those players, I don't think they wanted the media there. It was an unannounced visit. I think it was important the media was there, but they didn't want us there, and I understand why. It was a private moment for the players to pay their respects, which they were able to do quietly without any interruption from the media or anyone else, laying flowers on the memorial that you saw the president and others approach earlier this week. But then they just moved about a half block right alongside the Apollo Theater on Jefferson Avenue. And, they got behind the counter and they started serving up food, prepared food, packaged food, bottled water, you name it. They were handing it out to a community of people that were stunned. They're stunned by what has occurred. They were stunned that some of their heroes had showed up and were feeling what they were feeling and helping them through it. And I think it was a really, really meaningful day. And again, I felt uncomfortable being there, but I also thought it was important, as did the rest of the media, to bring that to everybody, because it was a touching time. But I'll tell you what hits me a little bit more are some of the things that you don't see, that you don't hear. I walked up Jefferson Avenue from the tops, and I was headed toward East Ferry Street, a few blocks north, and that is where all of the, much of the two large food distributions are happening. One is in front of Gigi's at the fridge there. It's called, it's noted as a fridge on the street where they're distributing food, and they do this all the time, but obviously it's grown exponentially. And then just down a little bit east of there on East Ferry Street, from the intersection of Jefferson, is the Mobile Tops. So I wandered to both of those places, and I'll tell you, the need is incredible. This is a walking community, a community that, doesn't just pop in the car and go to Tops or Wegmans and grab what they need. And that store has been removed from their neighborhood for obvious and necessary reasons. And it will be back, as you heard from the CEO of Tops this morning on WBEN. But the store will be back. But right now it's not there. And these people need somewhere to go. They need to be able to get their supplies. The Mobile Tops is doing that. I talked to a lady from Atlanta. She flew in from Atlanta to help meet the need. She was going back and forth. You may have heard some of her comments earlier today, back and forth to Sam's Club and some of the larger wholesale type places, getting supplies and groceries and delivering them to the people in need along East Ferry Street. That's also happening just south of the site. At the old War Memorial Stadium, where they're disseminating, needed goods and groceries, and also that's where the mental health counseling is also occurring for those who are in need. But those stories are the ones that stick with me more, because these are the people that live there, that are living it and dealing with it. They're scared, and they're kind of lost. And it's a very sad situation, and it's going to get better. It's getting better every day, and it'll start to get better as we start to mourn through funerals, which will begin on Friday morning. The first of which is occurring, I believe, at noon at a church. I think, on Fillmore Avenue. So all of that is going on, you know, and you know, you see the president, you see the Buffalo Bills, you know, you see the press conferences, but life is happening on Jefferson Avenue. Life is happening on East Ferry. Life is happening in that neighborhood. And I liken that neighborhood to the black community's Elmwood Avenue. It is a vibrant and bustling area stretching north and south. The mayor has talked a lot about it. In his comments on the radio station, how important that TOPS is. It's a central meeting point. It is a dispersal of needed services and goods in that neighborhood, in that community. You know, it's far different from, you know, Elmwood, but it's as meaningful to that community. We can't forget that. And we're not, because it's unbelievable the amount of support and love that's pouring out there in the form of volunteering and goods being donated. As I was in the parking lot of the Mobile TOPS, just cars were filing in one after the other. You know, the tailgate opening up and the bags coming out of there with groceries and packaged goods to be given away. I'd encourage you to do it. If you have the time and the wherewithal to do it, drive on down. It's along East Ferry right near Jefferson. There's a couple of spots there that you can make a very quick donation in and out and make a huge difference. So please do that today if you can. While I was sitting there, I was noting there was a gentleman in the parking lot who was kind of clutching a piece of paper, and he was looking at me. He saw the microphone, and I went up to him and I started talking to him, and he asked who I was with. He's a listener of the station as well. And Michael C. Myers, and Susan played this throughout the morning, but I want to play it for you right now. Michael was holding his TOPS receipt from Saturday. He was at the store just before all of this carnage occurred, and he told me about his story, and it moved me, and I think it will move you. Michael, remarkable story. You know, a matter of minutes, and you would have been inside the store when all hell broke loose Saturday.
A matter of 20 minutes or so, or less.
Tell me that story. I mean, why were you at the store, and what are you feeling about that today?
Just as those other people were doing just ordinary, mundane shopping. You know, you don't need to know, they don't need, you know, that you want to, oh, did you get apples? No, I was just doing my regular, mundane shopping as those people were, and I did that, and then I left, and I also forgot an item, and I decided not to go back. That may have saved me, but you always got this guilt. Now I got this haunting guilt. Why me? Why did I survive 20 minutes prior?
You know, it's interesting. You're walking around, you're carrying the receipt from your grocery stop on Saturday, and you did that for a reason, because you're able to follow up with
right.
Who helped
I
you
did,
out.
I didn't even, as much as traumatic and as it was, my concern, and that's what helped me mentally, my concern from the very start was for the lady that checked me out. So I was able to use the embrace that, my unselfishness and not worrying about me, and I'm the 20th person that survived. I wanted to know what happened to her, because that was, she was, we were definitely, that was the last person I engaged with was there, and my concern was that she made it out. And when I found out she made it out, it was somewhat of relief, if that's applicable, because that was my concern. So I wasn't worried about, hey, I'm the one who didn't make it. I'm the one who did. No, my concern was her.
That is Michael C. Martin. I think a remarkable story. You know, the fact that he was so worried about the clerk moved me, you know, that he was worried to, you know, and he was glad to find out, actually through a reporter from the Washington Post. So congratulations to that reporter for efforting that information for him via TOPS. But that clerk was unharmed in the incident, was in the store when it all occurred, because Michael was there only minutes before the rampage began. So a day he'll never forget. And I noted in a story on our website, WBEN.com, today, a day so many of us won't forget. We'll remember where we were when this story broke. You know, perhaps you have a thought on that. Perhaps you have a thought on how you'd like to see this case adjudicated. We're about to find out where it's going to begin legally within minutes, and we'll bring that to you as we get the information. Brayton Wilson is down there, 803-0930 and *930 if you want to join me as we all walk through this tragedy in Buffalo on News Radio 930 WBEN.
Hey, y'all. Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning once again, 937 at WBEN. I'm Tim Wenger in studio here. We have Brayton Wilson, who is in downtown Buffalo covering the court proceeding, whatever might occur, with the suspect in the Buffalo shootings. So we'll have coverage throughout the day of what is occurring. You can follow us at WBEN on Twitter. That would be an important place to watch as Brayton is watching everything unfold. It does not believe it has not even begun yet, whatever is going to happen. But again, knowing John Flynn and knowing what John Elmore said earlier today and Paul Cambry as well, I don't think the felony hearing will happen. I'm not an attorney, but it seems to me what's more likely is that they've already presented to the Erie County grand jury. John Flynn disappeared after all of his media appearances on Monday, and he almost sent the tea leaves out by saying, I'm not going to be talking anymore to the press after Monday. So I kind of take that for what it's worth, knowing the kind of stand-up DA that he is. WBEN Susan Rose is in studio here. And Susan, it seems like it was just yesterday when we were standing on Jefferson Avenue.
Right. Called there in the middle of the afternoon.
Yeah. And, you know, I kind of want to walk people back to that a little bit. We received a phone call from a very trusted source in the city government and Buffalo Police Department that something was unfolding and tragic in nature at that Tops. We didn't know exactly what. And as we, parked very close to the scene and kind of like, walked through a yard, we were right alongside. We were right at that parking lot. There were still victims in the parking lot. And the horror on the face of the people.
It was so raw is probably the best way to describe that. You're right. The faces of everybody. And it just seemed they were just converging around that store. It seemed like when we arrived, they were just putting up the yellow police tape.
Yeah. And, it was so hard because, people on the street were trying to figure out what had occurred. When something like that happens in your neighborhood, word spreads quickly. They knew more than we knew
right
at the time. We were hearing numbers from them that turned out to be fairly accurate that we didn't report right away because, you're not just
actually
not gonna,
they were under the number
yeah,
that it turned
true
out to be, which and we thought, that was a. When they said seven or eight, we thought, oh, my gosh.
And then they knew that the suspect was Caucasian. It was just very troubling. I want to someone on the text board, I made a comment earlier, and you've heard me say this because I've been, you were down there on Saturday, and I've been down there every day since for a long time yesterday. And I made the comment that Jefferson Avenue, to me, is the black community's Elmwood Avenue. And I don't think that is a
no,
disparaging thing to say at all, and I think the person on the text board took it that way, but that's not what was intended whatsoever. And he mentions, is it sad that there is a neighborhood that you could describe as that? I don't think it's sad. I mean, this is a community that's been there, that's their neighborhood.
It is, and the pride that they have, and the love, they call it their beloved Tops.
Right.
I mean that's what
they
it means.
Fought. When you talk to the mayor, there's almost a tear in his eye. I remember this, too, when, there were very few grocery stores in the city, and they're still very underserved. But, now you have a Wegmans on the west side. You have the Tops on Jefferson Avenue. There's
Niagara Street.
Yeah, Niagara Street. There's an Aldi right across from the Broadway Market, that I've been to and seen over there in covering things at the Broadway Market. But there's not enough. But they fought. They fought like hell to get that store.
I remember, like 20 years ago.
Right. And, You know, when you and I were thinking, you know, I think you had said, they got to knock this down. You would think
I did.
Your raw reaction is knock this place down.
How could they possibly reopen this store when we've seen these play out in other parts of the country? They do bulldoze those sites down and they turn into memorials and that. And I thought that same would happen here, but I have not heard one person from the community say that that should happen. They all want that store to reopen.
There's not a one. There is not one person, even from victims' families, nobody has said we should close that store. And thank God Tops has said they're not going to. Tops
right.
is 100% committed, as you well know.
Right. And John Persons told me that this morning. But they do want a public memorial on the site somehow to remember these victims, a place to go to remember what happened. And they want it in front of Tops, somewhere on the property, on the other side of the sidewalk or something. But they want something there to remember.
Yeah, the mayor was on with Tom Bowerly yesterday, and I almost think it might be too, the mayor even said, you might too soon to figure out where and how. And but I don't think it's a question of if. You know, there will
right.
be some sort of a place for people to remember. And, you know, I think that's important for a community and a country, too.
But the other thing that strikes me is how since that tragedy unfolded Saturday and the store obviously closed, what's happened with the response and the need in that community and how it's being met this week. It's incredible.
Yeah, and that's the part I'm trying to bring. I described, you know, my time yesterday where I was down, and, you know, I was kind of moved by it. And the Bills thing was an emotional, you know, and that was a headline and the pictures and video and just remarkable. And I said I felt like I was invading privacy by being there because it was a private moment. That's what I told Howard this morning on GR. But it's trying to bring the listener to the other stuff that's occurring on Jefferson Avenue and East Ferry Street, I think is what I'm trying to communicate. And, I don't want to send everybody that's listening down Jefferson Avenue right now because there's already a traffic situation
right.
going on there. But I'm telling you, if you're not there, you don't understand it. If you either don't live there, and I don't, of course, but, you know, I've been in there, in that neighborhood for 5 days and have learned great lessons about that community.
Right.
And
they're already rising up in the face of this. But I was saying at one point this morning that there is such a response this week. They need this response next week and the week after and the week after that. It can't just be this week.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking that yesterday as I was watching the donations come in, and it was a steady, steady stream of people coming in. I've described it, backing up, the tailgate opens, the bags and boxes. At one point, I know you heard this morning, an Amazon truck pulled into the driveway, which I thought was just for a routine delivery. The guy rolled up the back and he said, "This is all for you." I don't know who it's from. I don't know where it came from. But an entire truck was unloaded.
That
an
is amazing.
An entire box truck of stuff from Amazon. But, you know, I'm thinking, you know, what are they being overwhelmed? I don't
like
know. Like you said, 3-4 weeks from now.
That's when they need the continued response. They really do. And then you met up with, I think her name was Letitia Springer from Atlanta. We played her comments this morning on the morning show. Here's someone from Atlanta who was so inspired and saw the need here that she came up to help. She's loading her cars up and bringing groceries and everything else that people need and accepting donations and making sure that the need is met in the community. It's heartwarming is almost an understatement.
Yeah, she was remarkable, and she had made a couple of trips already when I talked to her. And then I was in the parking lot there at Gigi's, and in watching her, she never stopped. She was just running back and forth from car to unload stuff. We are learning now from Brayton that the felony hearing has started at the courthouse now for the 18-year-old shooter in this Tops mass shooting. So whether it is actually the felony hearing or a hearing, I'm not quite clear yet.
I'm also seeing, too, that now the case is being held for grand jury indictment. The arraignment has been requested for 3 weeks from today, June 9th at 9:30.
All right. Well, that is a breaking development right there here on WBEN. And that is kind of what John Elmore and others had thought. So, again, the actual felony hearing that had been scheduled is not taking place. A legal proceeding did take place again, in 3 weeks there would be?
June 9th, yes.
Okay, June 9th will be another day in a courtroom that will be unbelievable. As far as media presence, et cetera. But that is the latest from the courtroom, and Brayton is down there to cover it for us, and we'll have more as it becomes available, and of course coming up at 10 o'clock as well in the news with Randy and Brayton Wilson. You know, this morning you had a conversation, I think it was the first, with the CEO, the president of Topps Markets, John Persons. It's important for them that they got out information about their 514 fund. And you also found out that, they're 100% committed to reopening the store.
They really are. I mean, they're heartbroken, as the community is. But, I mean, they're obviously really directly impacted. He talks about the 514 fund and just also about the health of everybody at Topps. John Persons is joining me, president of Topps Friendly Markets, here on WBEN. And John, I know your Topps family is heartbroken, so is the community. How are you and your employees doing?
Hi, Susan. Yes, certainly. You know, all 14,000 Topps associates are heartbroken. I would tell you what's helping us get through these difficult days is just the positive outpouring from the community and the notes and kind words and the support. It's really quite amazing how everyone is trying to pull together to get through this.
It is remarkable to see this response. And I want to bring up, too, that Topps has created the Buffalo 514 Survivors Fund for families of the victims, for those directly impacted. Tell us about it.
Yes, it's exactly right. 2 days ago, we established the Buffalo 514 Survivors Fund. And 100% of the funds raised, every single penny, will go to the survivors of that horrible event. So the families of the victims, the people that were physically injured, and the people that were emotionally and mentally injured as well that particular day on site. So everything that is raised will go directly to those survivors. And it's really overwhelming to see. I checked this morning, we have about 5,000 individual donors already, and it continues to climb and grow.
And how did you start this fund off?
We worked quickly with an organization called the National Compassion Fund that is set up strictly to help in these situations and these type of tragic events. They already have the infrastructure established. So it was quick and easy for us to kind of work through them in order to get this fund going relatively quickly. We recognized, we heard from the community, people wanted to help, people wanted to support. So we recognized we needed to get on it pretty quick, and the National Compassion Fund allowed us to do that.
All right, and how can people find it? Is this a GoFundMe, or where do they find it?
Yeah, actually, the GoFundMe is probably the easiest way. So we have all the links on our webpage as you log on any of our social media. And maybe the easiest way is just to go to GoFundMe and search Buffalo Survivors Fund. It'll come up immediately. It's certainly the trending fund. That might be the easiest. We also have the ability to take checks and money wire as well.
I'm just looking at this fund right now, John. $905,000 raised. You said it. You started this 2 days ago.
We did. We started it 2 days ago, and certainly people are recognizing, you know, the importance of this fund, and they're donating to it, and it's just wonderful.
It's just incredible. I mean, it seems like the longest week ever since Saturday, and as horrible as this tragedy is, there are some remarkable things that are happening, especially with the mobile outreach to get food and other necessities to people in the community. What do you make of this grassroots effort that we're all witnessing?
Well, I think Buffalo and Western New York, I mean, I think we are a community that cares. I know you're a longtime Western New Yorker, as am I, and this is our home, and this was a horrible act, and when we need to come together, we will come together and make sure we support each other. And that's exactly what we're seeing.
How committed is Tops to the neighborhood?
100% committed. We are absolutely committed to the city of Buffalo and to the Jefferson Avenue neighborhood. The store was opened about 20 years ago, and it's been a great store for the community. It's been a great store for Tops, and we are completely committed to make sure that we have this store. It will take some time to open up this store. We want to make sure that it's done properly and respectfully, but we will reopen the store and we will service that neighborhood and that community again.
Yeah. How about the Tops family at the Jefferson store? I mean, what are you doing for these Tops employees while the store is closed?
You know, that's an important question. So the first 24 to 36 hours after this event, we really focused on trying to understand what was happening with all of the employees, all the associates, as we call them. And we wanted to make sure we understood where they were physically, how they were, where they were emotionally. And we have 86 associates at that store. And we were able to determine within 24 hours how they were all doing and where they were at. And then immediately we arranged for just different ways of support. So certainly grief counseling, and we're doing that on a daily basis. And we've honestly had great engagement with private and with group therapy. It's been very meaningful. We're also making sure that we support them, with food, and we're continuing their pay. We want to make sure that they feel as though they are really important members of the Tops family, and we will continue to do that.
All right. John, if you can, one more time, the Buffalo 514 Survivors Fund. All of the donations are going to survivors, family members of the deceased, and those directly impacted?
Yes, that is correct. 100%. All funds raised will go to the survivors of that tragic event.
All right. That is John Persons with you earlier this morning, and remarkable interview, and available at WBEN.com. Lots of information, but of course, 100% behind reopening the store. We do want to shift, though, to our breaking coverage right now, which is that on June 9th, we will have the arraignment on a presumed grand jury indictment of this 18-year-old suspect. And legal analyst Paul Cambry, of course, you know the voice well, is live with us right now. Paul, what do you know about what all this means? This is going to unfold, I guess, on June 9th now.
Well, we suspected that there would be a grand jury presentation before a preliminary hearing. And so it means that if the grand jury has considered this case and issued an indictment, that he'll be arraigned on it in June, and that will be the actual trial court. The city court does not have jurisdiction ultimately over serious felonies. They have what they call preliminary jurisdiction. That's why they call it a preliminary hearing. And that's just a procedure to hold the person for grand jury consideration. But the DA can short circuit that by issuing an indictment, calling witness, go before the grand jury, issue an indictment. And that's apparently what they've done here. So now he'll simply be taken back to custody. He'll be arraigned on the indictment. They'll have a discussion about bail, but he's not going to be granted bail. And then the process will go from there. The district attorney will have to turn over discovery within 30 days, and then the court will set hearing dates if hearings are appropriate. After that, a trial date.
At what point does this go to state Supreme Court?
Well, that's what's happened. Once you're indicted, it goes either to Supreme or County Court. Both of those courts are higher level courts, and they can dispose of felonies. And so this case will either go to County or Supreme Court, depending upon how it's assigned. And apparently that's going to happen in June, and the process will then begin.
Paul, will he continue to be held then in the Erie County Holding Center? Is that the appropriate spot?
Yeah, that's probably where they would hold him. See, in his case, because of the suicide watch and so on, it'll depend on what they have available facilities. If they feel they can do it here better than at Wendy, that's what they'll do.
We saw him be escorted into court by six Erie County Sheriff deputies this morning. Is that not, that can't be normal, I'm guessing.
Well, no, but it's also not unprecedented. We've had cases in the past where we've had that kind of security also.
You know, Paul, you know, we saw him last in court over the weekend, you know, in that paper suit. He's in the orange jumpsuit and shackled at the wrists, obviously. You know, they did not unlock him. You know, any surprise there? I mean, I would assume they'll probably go back under this suicide guard watch, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that he's in a uniform and the jumpsuit now is not to be unexpected, because the deputies are with him, so he can't, you know, fashion a noose and commit suicide with, you know, one of the pant legs, because they're with him. When he gets back to the jail, then he may very well go back into the paper situation, so that there are no possibilities of him fashioning some way of taking his life.
Paul, how do you separate in a case like this the emotion of a community, the emotion, you know, lawyers are humans too. You know, you are a human. We know that. You know, you love and you care like anyone else. How do you separate all that, whether you're on the prosecution side or the defense side in something like this?
Well, it can be difficult, and you have to have that conversation with yourself. Is this the case for me? Can I put my heart into this case, kind of thing? I anticipate that what will happen is he'll be arraigned, it'll go into the process, discovery will be exchanged, he'll probably have a more in-depth psychiatric examination, maybe called for by his defense attorney just to make sure. And then once it gets to the trial stage and they start jury selection, that's when you'll see whether or not a fair jury can be accomplished here in Erie County. And you won't know that until you start questioning jurors. And if juror after juror after juror says, look, I just can't be fair, I saw it all on TV, I know it happened, you know, I can't presume I'm innocent, and all the rest of it, then they would move for a change of venue, like to Rochester or Syracuse or someplace like that.
Paul, we don't know if his family was in court or not. That probably will come out soon. But is he allowed to meet with his family at the holding center?
Yeah, they have visitation privileges. It's probably behind a screen. You know, there's no contact, and it's of short duration. But sure, they can have visitors besides their legal team and people hired by their legal team. So, yeah, that's not unusual at all.
Paul, we appreciate the time again. Thank you.
All right. My pleasure.
Our legal expert, attorney Paul Cambria.
All right. And just in from the Erie County District Attorney's Office, we do have a statement from them as expected, and it reads like this. The felony hearing scheduled to occur this morning before Buffalo City Court Judge Craig Hanna has been adjourned pursuant to New York State Criminal Procedure Law Article 180.80. Due to action of the grand jury, the matter scheduled to return for further proceedings Thursday, June 9th, 9:30 a.m. Before Judge Hanna. Again, the defendant continues to remain held without bail. There will be no further comment from our office until there is a report following an investigation by the grand jury. As all our persons are accused of a crime, the defendant is presumed innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Very telling of Erie County DA John Flynn. He did his last interview earlier this week. You're not going to hear from him again until he can.
He said things would shut down, and they did exactly that.
Yeah, indeed. WBEN's Brayton Wilson is down there. You'll hear him live next with Randy as we cover this story throughout the day. Court mayhem down there in downtown Buffalo for ever so short a briefing, a legal proceeding, probably among the shortest legal proceedings to have such attention in the city of Buffalo. So that is next with Randy, and then, of course, David Bellavia to walk you through more throughout the day. Susan, thank you. I'm Tim Wenger here on WBEN.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.